For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. I'm Douglas Floyd. I'm speaking because our Dharma teacher, lead Dharma teacher, Taigen Dan Layton, is on sabbatical. So some of the students have been taking turns leading all-day sittings like we're holding today and in giving Dharma talks. So this was my turn. It's been sort of challenging. I think it's been good to have to think through aspects of our practice. So I hope that I can present my thoughts and provide and illuminate some of the teaching to be helpful to you in your practice. Today I want to talk about case two in the Blue Cliff Record collection of koans. Everyone has one. And let's just read the case that Shwedo recorded. It says, Zhao Zhou, teaching the assembly, said, "The ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing." As soon as their words spoken, this is picking and choosing, this is clarity. This old monk does not abide within clarity. Do you still preserve anything or not? At that time, a certain monk asked, "Since you do not abide within clarity, what do you preserve?" And Zhao Zhou replied, "I don't know either." The monk said, "Since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say that you do not abide within clarity?" And Zhao Zhou said, "It is enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw." So, this isn't as cryptic as some koans, but it's pretty brief, and so I think it does require some explication to make the themes clear. So just to provide some background, we have spoken about Master Zhao Zhou before. Zhao Zhou Zongshen was maybe the greatest Zen master in the history of Zen. He lived from 778 to 897, so almost 120 years. He became a monk when he was very, very young, and he became a student of Nanchuan. He received Dharma transmission, and he eventually set up his own monastery when he was 80 and taught for another 40 years. And he's famous for using words to illuminate the Dharma. So he didn't do some of the crazy things like later teachers did, like hitting students or shouting. Although he wasn't violent, he did do some unusual things. You may remember the story about Nanchuan kills the cat, where Nanchuan asked the monks in the assembly, "Well, say a word of Zen or I'm going to kill the cat." Nobody said anything, so he killed the cat, and then Zhao Zhou came in and heard the story, and he took off his shoes and put them on his head and walked out of the room. So I won't say that he wasn't unusual sometimes. But he was very important. I don't know how many koans he is featured in the Book of Serenity. He's in 12 of the 100 koans in the Blue Cliff Record. He's in 5 of the 48 koans in the Gateless Barrier. So he has a pretty high profile in the tradition. And to provide a little more background, just in the opening sentence of the koan, he says, "Zhao Zhou, teaching the assembly, said, 'The ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing.'" So that's a quotation from the opening lines of a famous poem called the Xinxin Ming, which was written, in the 6th century by the 3rd patriarch, Zhenji Songzhen. So he's the 3rd Chinese master in our lineage. So Bodhidharma, Weka, Sungtsen. And so, you know, you kind of have to say, you know, there's this traditional Zen saying that this is a tradition not dependent on words and letters. So I'm talking about a case that was published in a book that was collected in, oh, let's see, the 10th or 11th century, about a monk who lived in the 8th century, who's quoting a poem that was written in the 6th century. So there's a lot of talking about words and letters in the tradition. And it's helpful to know on the next page under the commentary, those opening lines are supplemented with with the first stanza, the entire first stanza of the poem. It's, the ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing. Just don't love or hate, and you'll be lucid and clear. So that's where Zhaozhou's reference to clarity comes from. But that language is actually, it's pretty ambiguous in the original Chinese, and so translations into English, I mean, intentionally ambiguous, I would say. Translations into English take a number of different approaches to translating them. They usually say, don't love or hate, but, you know, it's just drop off or cut off, like and dislike, and it can be, and you'll be lucid and clear, you'll be clear, the great way will be clear, the world will be clear, and like universe will be clear and like space. I don't think it makes a big deal. The point is, when you stop, when you've avoided picking and choosing, then there will be a realization, a clear mind that realizes what the world is and how to follow the great way. So this was, the poem was written early enough that, you know, there, the great way is the Tao. Sun Tzu used the word Tao, and that was because when Buddhism first came to China, the Chinese already had a long Taoist and Confucian tradition, very sophisticated thought and vocabulary of philosophical and religious terms. And the Chinese thought there were a lot of correspondences between what they already knew about and what they were coming into contact with in Buddhist teaching, and so they used the terms fairly interchangeably, which sometimes, I would guess, created some connotations for Buddhist terms that weren't there in the original Indian understanding of Buddhism. And you can understand some of the difficulty when you understand that Tao was used sometimes. Tao is Dharma as a teaching and the way of life. Tao could be the universe. It could be Buddha mind, in effect. Tao could be Bodhi, the awakened mind or awakening mind. So all this got kind of slippery. But that first quote, you know, that let's say the ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing. Drop off like or dislike, and everything will be clear. You know, that's sort of like Mahayana Buddhism or Zen 101, right? I mean, the fundamental truth of our life is that we are an aspect of or part of a boundless universe that encompasses everything. That everything, the things that we can perceive, the circumstances that we see, all compound things and situations are subject to change, and they are all codependent. They're interrelated. They exist only in relationship with everything else and subject to causation. And so, you know, the problem is that that's not how we live. We have a sense of ourselves as having a fixed identity that isn't really dependent on circumstances or very slightly dependent on circumstances. I mean, Douglas is the same when he's sitting here giving a Dharma talk as he would be going to work, sitting in the office, or going to the lake on vacation, or being sent in a rocket to the moon, whatever the circumstances, it's Douglas. But at the same time, we have this sort of disjunction between the fact that my identity, my very existence, is subject to change and is dependent on the conditions in which I live and which I don't control entirely because everything is contributing to those circumstances. I, like everyone else, get caught up in self-centered thinking and emotions and desires because of the classic description, right? I don't have what I want. I want what I don't have. What I have could be taken away from me, or down the road, something that I don't want to happen is going to come on. And so that we get caught up in that. And being caught up in that is in itself a kind of suffering. It's dukkha, because it's unpleasant. We feel neediness and anxiety about what we have, what could happen, what is not going to happen. But then when those bad things happen, we're also sort of startled. Well, how could that have happened? I mean, I did my very best to control this, and it happened anyway. Or it wasn't supposed to change after all. And our practice is to deal with that self-centered perception of ourselves as that fixed, independent self and identity, and to deal with that craving, craving and anxiety, that longing, that dread, liking, disliking, judgment, this is better than that, or better for me than that is, and that's what I want, that's what I don't want. And we do that by sitting still with our breathing and just letting go of the thinking. That's the part about avoiding picking and choosing. When we let go of those thoughts, and we see through and emotions and our choices, just when we let go, the letting go is accompanied by a greater awareness of them. We see what's going on, and at the same time, we're not clinging to them, we're not caught up in them. They lose some of their power. There's a greater freedom in letting go of that thinking. Letting go of that sense. I mean, the craving, it also reinforces that sense, that focus on ourselves, and that sense that we are a separate, independent me. And the Shinshin Ming is clear that the Dharma, what our practice is letting go of, not avoiding this picking and choosing. And when that happens, we'll become clear. And that clarity, is the combination of a calmer mind, a less troubled, chaotic mind, and that greater awareness, understanding, insight into what's going on, who we are, how the world works. But Jiaozhou and the Shinshin Ming is clear that as long as that picking and choosing is, I would look at this, I see this, I want this, I see that, I don't want that, I like this better than that, I'm going to pursue this, there is no clarity. We don't realize the great way. So sit on your cushions and keep breathing. Don't move. But Jiaozhou wants to throw a little light on there based on what's already in the Shinshin Ming, right? He says, well, as soon as there are words spoken, this is picking and choosing, this is clarity. He's going, well, wait, I mean, you're telling me Stop picking and choosing. Be clear. Well, that only exists. There's only a difference because we're thinking. And isn't the decision to be clear and to pursue clarity, isn't that picking and choosing? So haven't you just told me I've got no hope at all? Yep. That's pretty much what that means. If you read it that way. But Jiaozhou takes it a little further than that. And the point is that the world, the universe, Buddha, encompasses our lives whether or not we are awakened, whether we are clear, or whether we are picking and choosing. All of that is an aspect and a manifestation of Buddha. And our task, our practice, is to live in accord with Buddha. So we can't say, okay, I'm going to pick this, I'm going to pick this, I'm going to be clear, I'm not going to be clear. What Jiaozhou says is you're not going to cut off your picking and choosing. You're not going to live in clarity, in perfect clarity. He says, I'm not going to abide, I don't abide within clarity. He's not going to try to stay there. He's not going to stick in one aspect of his life, one aspect of Buddha. I don't know that you could. I mean, we have, Jiaozhou would say, I have zillions of kalpas of past lives that have built up all my karma. And that doesn't stop. It doesn't even stop when I'm awake. The picking and choosing, the thoughts and desires and emotions, they still come up. So if my purpose is to manifest, to allow the Buddha to manifest itself and express itself through me, I have to let that picking and choosing exist. I don't have to engage in it. I can let it go. I don't suppress it. Don't try to stop it. I don't try to cover it up. I sit with it. And the same for clarity. Sometimes I'm clear. Sometimes I'm calm. Sometimes I understand. I mean, everybody must have had that, right? Sometimes you go, bam, this is pretty simple. I really understand that. And 5 minutes later, it's kind of, I'm not sure what I was thinking about 5 minutes ago. I don't understand. That's fine. That's just a conditioned state of mind. We have to let that go. And in doing that, that's the clarity. Because we are no longer, we allow picking and choosing, thoughts, emotions, desires, clarity come and go without being caught up in them, not pulling us all around in our actions. We're just awake to those. So, we're awakened within our delusion. If we're trying to hang on to the clarity, we're deluded within our awakening, as Dogen would say. So what we have to do is we live clarity beyond clarity, clarity beyond picking and choosing. You know, these are the approach is what we've seen in plenty of other writings. We've seen in Dogen, right? Our practice when we sit in Zazen is not to think and not to not think. We non-think. We let the thoughts and emotions and desires arise and fall without interfering with them. We awaken within the delusion. So Jiaozhou throws out that point that he says, yeah, Sun Tzu, that was well said, but you haven't taken it quite far enough. Our practice is not to cultivate and hold on to clarity. Our practice is to sit with what is, whatever comes up, whatever comes up in the world, whatever comes up within us. But then he tests the monk, right? He says, this old monk does not abide within clarity. Do you still preserve anything or not? So what does he mean by preserve? I think he's, are you, I don't abide, I don't hold on to clarity. Are you holding on to anything? What are you doing? And the monk says, well, since you do not abide, he's not going to answer. He's going to challenge Jiajiao in response. And he says, since you do not abide within clarity, what do you preserve? What are you cultivating? What are you trying to stick with and hold on to in order to manifest the great way? And Jiajiao replies, I don't know that either. Right? I don't know. And the question is that a matter of information? I know, but I'm not going to tell you. I don't know because I'm ignorant, or is don't know something different? I think it's something different. I think it's that it's don't knowing is not knowing. It's not knowing. It's not thinking. It's not not thinking. It's non-thinking. This is non-knowing, if you like. It's having an experience and not holding on to it and acting within the greater freedom that that involves. So he says, I don't know. I don't know either. And the monk says, since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say that you do not abide within clarity? And he keeps trying to go get Jiajiao to say, well, you've got this understanding into not abiding within picking and choosing, not abiding with clarity, isn't that some sort of clarity? And Jiajiao says, it's just enough to ask the question, now bow and leave. Right? I think that's right. That we're not coming up with answers. We're not coming up with information and explanations. This is not wisdom in the sense of coming up with a better informed or smarter way to pick and choose. It's not knowing what, not trying to grab hold of anything and pin it down so that we can live within that. It's thoroughgoing, not knowing. So Jiajiao's not really, he's not criticizing the Xinxin Ming, but he's drawing out some of the implications that aren't there on its face. And it's a very important poem. If I said that Jiajiao is in 12 of the koans in the Blue Cliff Record, 4 of those 12 include the words, the ultimate path is without difficulty, just avoid picking and choosing. 4 out of 100 koans, 4 out of Jiajiao's 12. So, if you go online, you can find translations of Xinxin Ming. There are websites that have at least links to at least 20 translations. And it's worth time reading some of those and thinking about those a little bit. But the main thing is going to be sitting on your cushion, not moving, not trying to get clear, not trying to understand, sitting and breathing and letting go of thoughts, emotions, desires, experiences, not holding on to clarity, not holding on to calmness. And in that way, dropping off self-centered perception of yourself so that you can then live in accordance with the formless, dynamic, interconnected world of Buddha. Finding yourself present in the world, present with other people, in community, in relationship with everything and with everyone. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, does anybody have any thoughts or questions about either this or anything else in practice? Nicholas.
Hi, thanks for this talk. Terrific talk. And, you know, I get a lot out of this talk. And, you know, the notion of picking and choosing has, it's been a part of my practice, you know, like just the notion of that, like having teachers. They stop that, doing that, or being in situations where if I'm upset or something, I can just say to myself, well, just stop picking and choosing. You know, it's a real grounding phrase to just, and I think it goes to the end of the poem too, which is because then I think examine, like, what's going on? What is this? What's bothering me about reality? You know, like, how am I arguing against it? Because that's usually that's what gets upset, right? When I think that I know something. And the more I sit, the more I practice, it's just, I really feel like, yeah, there's just, I don't know anything. And I run a business, and a lot of times I feel like I have no clue about how to do that either. But yeah, I do it, and it works so much better. You know, my staff and everybody, I get along much better when I come with the don't know mind to the set, which I think that's a lot of this come on too. It's like, it really, you know, it's a mystery. You know, can I just accept the fact that I'm not going to know and embrace, you know, the causes and conditions as they show up moment to moment, and, you know, be okay with that. So it's, to me, this coins a lot about how ego gets in the way of my practice, you know, because, you know, picking and choosing implies that you know something, that I know something.
You know, that don't know is a phrase that appears in a good many koans, and I don't know if any of you have ever read or any of the books of letters written by Sungsan Sunim, the Korean Zen master, or if you've studied with the Kwanum Zen School, which he founded. Don't know and don't know mind was something he said over and over and over again. And when they teach meditation practice, they teach a sort of sitting with the breath, but as you breathe in, you say, you know, clear mind, clear mind, clear mind. And as you exhale, you say, don't know. I mean, most of the people who come to Zen tend to be pretty analytical. They want to figure things out. They want to pin things down. They want to have an explanation or a definition of everything. And that practice helps to let that go. Not that it isn't useful, but it's different to cling to it for identity. I mean, you know, any concept is going to be, it could be useful, but it's an inadequate definition or description of things. And when we use concepts or images to communicate about things or to think of them to ourselves, I mean, we cannot help but use words that suggest, at least, that things are fixed and independent from other things. So we have to keep letting go of that. Yeah. Ah, Kathy, yeah.
Thank you for talking. It is very... I can spend a lot of time on. And I mean, the implication behind this is it doesn't go with this means you have to also accept it doesn't matter. It could be this or that. You know, you can experience things if you go on a trip or if you don't go on a trip or whatever your choices are. You know, and I think we have this thing in our mind that it matters so much. It has to be just right. Or I struggle with that. And that's the other invitation is that it doesn't really matter. You can do this or that. It's like you're still in community. You're still on the earth. You're still part of the whole picture.
Yeah, and in a lot of it is that don't know and letting go of that thinking. I mean, it can be fairly simple. You know, you can plan, okay, for lunch we're going to have almond rice. Almond rice will be good. I love almond rice. That's what we're going to have. And then you start working on cooking lunch and there are no almonds. And I don't know if anyone else has ever had that sort of thing. You go, oh, man. Right? You know, because things didn't work, you know, but you can let go of that and be more flexible. You don't have to invest in how you think things are going to work out. We have to make plans. We have to have ideas about things in order to live. We have to decide what we're going to wear every day. But there's a difference between thinking and clinging to the thinking and clinging to the description of how we think things are or are going to be or ought to be. Yes?
I wasn't sure if you were in mid-thought or completing a thought.
Nope, go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to thank you for offering a moment of clarity. I've always heard the phrase, the great way is without difficulty, just the way that you're choosing. And I've never heard it translated as the ultimate path, which is really helpful because when I hear the word ultimate, I think about ultimate as, you know, compared to the phenomenal world that we live in. And that always, you know, makes me remember that the ultimate always translates this phenomenal dimensional world, and because that's the what's embedded in the first noble truth of dukkha, that things are always out of whack. And so I think about, you know, applying this to things that we want to do in the world that we think are good. You know, we want to cure diseases and help babies and extend people's lives, and then we get ourselves, and in doing that, which seems like a good thing, we get ourselves into the problem of side effects of overpopulation, like, you know, emissions and famine and things. And then, you know, and then if we try to do something about, climate change, which may not 100% be controllable by us either, but then that, you know, requires us to change our whole way of life. So for anything that we pick and choose in the phenomenal world, there are consequences to that. And yet we can't just, you know, sort of throw up our hands and say, well, you know, it doesn't matter or there's nothing we can do. We're constantly confronted with this question of how do we both live in the phenomenal world and keep an eye within the realm of the ultimate. So I appreciate your expounding on this. I hadn't studied this.
Well, and we don't have a choice, right? Not theoretically, I mean, we say, well, I'm not going to pick or choose. You've just made a choice.
Yeah.
About what you will or won't do or how things are going to work out. Or may are likely to work out.
And our choices have consequences.
Yeah. I really do recommend reading the Xinxin Ming. It's not a long poem. I mean, I don't know, 140 lines or so, something like that.
What's the name of it again?
It's translated lots of ways. It's usually faith in mind, something like that. Even that. It's got lots of translations, inscriptions on faith in heart mind or things like that. And Shin is both mind and heart, right? And so Shin Shin Ming.